Giant fan of investigative journalist Jamie Bartlett. He came into my orbit with his first, I think it was his first book, The Dark Net, and continued on with Radicals Chasing Utopia and more recently People Versus Tech. I was unaware that he had made the leap until recently to media stardom with regard to both video and the BBC Two series, The Secrets of Silicon Valley, but was surprised to learn that he now has a podcast, which I'm going to admit I hate him a lot for, because it is unbelievably great. It's called The Missing Crypto Queen, which I have him on today to discuss. But first off, Jamie, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me. You read The Darknet. That's way back.
Yeah,
that's
it's old school. Yeah, I was going to actually, I was going to have my wife take it down from the from my bookshelf here before we started recording, but now I'm tethered to everything so I could quote from it. Yeah, big, big fan.
Cool. Great. Yeah. That was my foray into the weird world of all things dark internet, but it obviously took me into the world of cryptocurrency back in 2014. So I guess that's the link from there all the way up to here and the missing crypto queen.
And that was going to be probably my very first question, because you've also delved into anarcho-capitalists, crypto-anarchists. So you don't come at cryptocurrency from sort of the typical mainstream journalist perspective, where we're all terrorists and drug dealers and money launderers. You come in from a decidedly learned perspective. So before we delve too much further, how would you, if you were to describe your overall impression of cryptocurrency, do you come down more as a skeptic, or do you see it as a hopeful innovation, or where do you sort of lie?
Yeah. Strangely difficult question. I'll tell you, generally speaking, though, I take strange fringe ideas very seriously. I think that's why when you see I'm writing about these subjects, I don't just dismiss them out of hand. I don't say they're terrible, but I also don't say they're definitely going to change the world for the better, and we're going to be living in this Timothy C. May paradise of small anarchic communes connected up by decentralized networks. But I do, sort of through the sweep of history, and I studied history, which is maybe why I take this approach, ideas that were once very strange can very, very quickly become very normal. And so I always find that it's on the fringes, the weird movements that most people ignore or dismiss, that you get a good sense of where society's going. So I've never really felt myself as either a skeptic or an optimist about cryptocurrency, just a very interested observer who tries to sort of explain it to people in a way that makes sense for them, you know, because a lot of the language, a lot of the terminology, even a lot of the behavior can alienate people, and then they miss the idea and what's really going on.
And I love that your filter is what you've termed Jamie's mom's standard. So you actually, you know, would you try, as you, and again, I'm trying to frame this as I believe you come at it, which is sort of a love-hate relationship with technology. Where it's
I thought you were going to say with my mom.
Tell me about your mother.
Which is also true.
Yeah, but you come at it with that sort of, you know, on the one hand, it's this tsunami of ubiquity and in terms of the tech and business and so on. And on the other, it's very difficult to explain what's happening to the hoi polloi, to mom, right? Yeah. And so what briefly is the Jamie Mum standard here?
Well, it's both an actual useful test for everyone to apply, but if I'm going to be honest, also a bit of a cheeky literary device, really. So basically, when it comes to things like blockchain technology or Bitcoin or whatever, anything that's remotely complicated for an ordinary person, it's very, very hard to explain it in a way that makes sense to a layperson. And not only is that a real problem because that means the layperson ignores it or misunderstands it, it also is bad because, you know what, people can actually get lazy and not really understand complicated ideas themselves. When you're forced to try to explain it to somebody who does not know what you're talking about, you actually realize how well you understand it yourself. So it's a very useful exercise in testing your own knowledge. And when we made this podcast about the missing crypto queen, which I'm sure we'll come to, I realized that by episode 2, for the story to work, I would have to explain what a blockchain is to the listeners. And, you know, this podcast is with the BBC. It's meant to be aimed at a really, really broad, wide audience. And the idea that, you know, they've listened to one episode and suddenly they're going to get a 10-minute description of blockchain, we just knew it wouldn't work. So I thought, how can I explain blockchain to people, but also make them feel not bad if they don't get it? Because I wanted this podcast to be listened to by people who didn't necessarily understand blockchain. And I had this idea, if I could explain it to my mum, firstly, it would be quite funny and people might enjoy it and listen. Secondly, it would force me to make it simple. And thirdly, when my mum says, as I knew she would, at the end of my description, no, I still don't understand it. You heard it. It was so simple, wasn't it? I mean, I couldn't have made it any simpler. And she still says, no, I don't understand it. Can you spend it at Tesco's, which is our big supermarket here? I suppose it's our Walmart or whatever.
Right.
And I said, well, no, not yet, but maybe you could. And she said, oh, you know, so it's an experiment then. No, not really an experiment because it kind of works. Well, why can't you spend it at Tesco's then? Well, because, you know, and what I hope that would also do was that people that were listening that would have the same question, how do I use OneCoin or Bitcoin or whatever in my shop? They wouldn't feel stupid for having that question because they'd know that someone else has the same question.
Mm-hmm.
So it was both a way of, you know, a good test to see whether the description's clear, but also, frankly, a way to get a listener to engage with the subject.
Just brilliant. And so into the missing crypto queen, again, I'm insanely jealous. It is, it's a takeoff from, if I can be so bold, of the American public broadcasting idea of Serial, which was about a murder and the listener.
I've vaguely heard of that 175 million download podcast.
Yeah, it's vaguely. But yours and I'm not just blowing smoke. I think yours has the potential to actually be better ultimately. And
wow.
And yeah, I I'm dead serious. I wouldn't say it if I just wouldn't say it. But it's old school investigative journalism, a 9-month, I guess, gestation of you gumshoeing it out there and then giving birth to this wow, I took that far, and giving I guess giving birth to this podcast. And it's theater of the mind, it's a mystery, and you're inviting listeners along, like they're actually influencing the outcome of the podcast as you're going. So I'm already kind of getting over my skis here, so let's back up for a second. Who is Ruja Ignatova?
Yes, right. And I just want to say at the outset, this is not a podcast that we made, finished, and then started releasing. We are still investigating it today. Today, I have been chasing down leads that I've been getting from callers and people emailing in. And which is why it sounds like it does. It's a genuine investigation unfolding. And it's stressful because we got deadlines to hit. But we're getting leads and we're changing our story up and everything. So it's been crazy. And it's, you know, as soon as I get off the call with you, I'm going to be back on it again. So Dr. Ruja Ignatova is a Bulgarian German businesswoman, comes out of nowhere in 2014 and says, Bitcoin is full of nerds, they're arrogant, it's complicated, ordinary people will never be able to use it, the regulators won't ever accept it, and I have created a better one, and it's called OneCoin. And if you invest early, you know, this is 2014, we're right at the beginning, it's less than 50 cents for a OneCoin. If you invest early now, the price is going to keep going up and up and up, and you're going to become richer than all those Bitcoiners that bought in 2009, 10, 11. And most of the people inside the crypto world have never heard of this, or they've just vaguely, you know, crossed their radar in 2016 or 17, something like that. What they might not realize is that over 4 billion euros was invested into OneCoin. 4 billion euros. And the most remarkable thing of all is that in October 2017, at the peak of its powers, as it was growing faster and faster, and it had over a million people that had invested, Dr. Ruja Ignatova disappears. She takes a flight from Bulgaria to Athens, Greece, and she hasn't been seen since. And the FBI, just 3 months ago, unsealed charges against her for money laundering, wire fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, securities fraud, and they want, you know, it's an unsealed charge. Her brother took over when she left. He was arrested in Los Angeles, and he is awaiting a pretrial hearing. And Dr. Ruja remains at large, and millions of people still believe in OneCoin. I mean, isn't that the most unbelievable story you've ever... It's incredible.
I would say yes, under almost any other circumstances, if I have not been working in cryptocurrency for as many years as I have. It's no longer as shocking. But
I can see that.
What is shocking is how you have been connecting these dots and doing just incredible work in the sense of how big this thing is. As you meant, you flung out the 4 billion number, and actually, I hope listeners will binge on your podcast, The Missing Crypto Coin. That number actually increases exponentially, you find, at least anecdotally, right?
It's all around the world, right? Time period. Yeah, 4 billion just covers August 2014 to March 2017.
Right.
But it's still going today. So the estimates go up from various people to over 10 billion that's been invested. And the thing about it is the way that the scam has worked, because it is a scam, and the point of the podcast is to try to find the woman and uncover how the scam has worked, is that it is so clever, so ingenious, takes in so many different... I sort of feel like the scammers here have worked out all society's different weak points and exploited them. And maybe we'll get to that, but scammers are so smart is the kind of summary point, I suppose, but they've taken the hype of crypto, and used that hype to convince people to invest in something they really didn't understand is amazing.
Now I'm instantly divided here between my loyalties, which are somewhat strange, and I acknowledge that. But I don't mind scams in maybe the opposite sense that that you do. In other words, to me, they're the lie that speak to the greater truth. So I am fascinated by them. I study them just like you watch maybe the toothy Protestant ministers from the United States who, throw their coats at people and so on. I can watch those guys for hours. So I find it super fascinating. But on the other hand, what you have done is you have taken me from just a voyeur who is sort of in on the joke and likes to laugh at other people's idiocy. And you have really made it into a human story, a tragedy. And as you say, it impacts people from really all walks of life. I mean, there is a particular personality maybe developing, but I mean, you have people in Scotland, you have people in Amsterdam, you have people in Pakistan, people in Africa. I mean, this thing is a worldwide phenomenon, but let me back up for just 1 second here and go from the OneCoin perspective. I mean, shouldn't you be, I mean, you're a BBC shill, right? This is what they would say. This is you're obviously state run media. I mean, aren't you the problem? I mean, you're obviously there protecting banks and you're protecting the traditional legacy financial interests. And all OneCoin wants to do is bring the world together in a multicultural picnic and sing financial kumbaya.
Well, do you have any sympathy with that view from OneCoin? I ask it seriously because the broad philosophy of some of the sort of crypto community is a soft antagonism towards some of the bigger institutions and media and centralized systems. And the thing is, I do understand that, and I get where that comes from, and sometimes it's completely right. And OneCoin takes that and takes the same message and uses it to try to discredit legitimate criticism. So it has called me and the BBC fake news, propaganda, protecting banks, all the stuff that might also serve as legitimate criticism when big media outlets complain about Bitcoin. And for somebody watching, it's quite hard to know how you'd tell the difference and why one criticism is fair and one's not. And the thing is, I got to say, it's very frustrating from my perspective, you know, because obviously I'm doing my best to try to, like you say, this scam has covered, well, at least 175 countries that we have found. And I've been to the remotest places imaginable where people have invested all of their money into what they thought was the next Bitcoin. And it's very frustrating to then be told you're fake news, you're lying, because unfortunately I know that money's not coming back and there's not much I can say to them.
It is a heartbreaking part of the podcast, the missing crypto queen. And it is, something I wasn't again expecting. I was you know, fancying myself the smartest guy in the room, and then I started to hear the rhetoric of Dr. Ruja, and ouch, Jamie, ouch.
Was it the same stuff?
Roughly speaking, yes. I mean, as hard as it is for me to admit, CoinSpice is for sure antagonistic towards bankers, regulators, central authorities, just by way of the cryptocurrency ethos. So I think this is why a guy like, Timothy Curry or Timtation, as he's known online, becomes a somewhat early kind of central figure. Can you go into how he enters your orbit?
Yeah, he's a Californian guy who's a big Bitcoiner, and he, in 2015-16, right at the beginning, spots there's something wrong with OneCoin. And I suppose I should say right now, if people are sort of wondering, well, what's the big, how do you know it's not real and all the rest of it? It's a cryptocurrency that's essentially sold through a pyramid selling system. So if you imagine you have lots of different multi-level marketing, it's often called, where you recruit somebody and they recruit somebody and you get commission on the people you've recruited, their sales, and it sort of kind of goes on forever almost. Well, it can't go on forever, of course, but it goes on for a while. And instead of that being vitamins or health products or beauty products, it's a fake cryptocurrency. And this is one of the reasons why it has spread so far and so fast, because it hasn't spread through the crypto world. It's spread through the multi-level marketing world, which is a completely different audience. And it's a very well-established world, this multi-level marketing. And it taps into ordinary people. Like Bernie Madoff had large institutional investors. OneCoin didn't. OneCoin had lots of, and still has lots of, ordinary people who've gathered together 5,000 euros or whatever, small amounts of money, and have been told by their friends about this amazing new thing. And their friends, by the way, believe in this because they can't tell the difference between your criticism of the banks and OneCoin's criticism of the banks. Mm-hmm. They don't know what makes a real blockchain work. All they know is that this woman, Dr. Ruja, went to Oxford University, has a PhD, appeared speaking at an economist conference, and looks incredibly credible. So they go for it. but it was not. I mean, why would you need a pyramid selling system to buy a cryptocurrency? Why couldn't you just buy it at an exchange?
Mm-hmm. And then Bitcoiners would take that one step further and say, why not just buy Bitcoin? Right.
So the thing is, where I was going with that is that they kept promising that one day people are buying all these OneCoin and the price is going up, but the price is being set internally by the head office. It's not based on demand and supply because there's no marketplace where you can buy and sell it. So people think they're getting more and more and more value out of their coin, but it's just a number that's been made up. Now, Timothy Curry, who's a Bitcoiner, sees all this and realizes this is going to really undermine people's trust in Bitcoin because they'll think it's part of the same thing and it will ruin exactly. cryptocurrencies. So he starts going around trying to tell people about OneCoin, calling it a scam and warning people, but nobody really listens to him. And it's frustrating, I think, for him and for others, because I think a lot of people in the Bitcoin world ignored OneCoin because they thought nobody would fall for it. They thought, obviously, people will see through this. But maybe in the Bitcoin world they did, but not in the multi-level marketing world. But Timothy Curry goes around and he becomes, central in the story because one of our chief victims, a woman called Jen from Scotland, Timothy Curry approaches her and says, this is a scam. You've got to stop selling it. You're going to lose all of your money. She does not believe him for 6 months. And they argue and argue and argue. And slowly mm-hmm. she comes around. And amazingly, they've saved all the footage of all their arguments. So we have all the arguments of a Bitcoiner arguing with a OneCoiner about it. And it's amazing footage, you know.
It really is.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And just a thought I was having as you were talking and we were sort of ferreting out why the multi-level marketing world would, kind of be so taken with this idea and maybe why the MLM world, I guess, would be so taken with this idea is simply because coming from the crankier side of the cryptocurrency debate here, with CoinSpice, we would say, look, it's because of the prohibitionist attitude of legacy finance that they have erected these ginormous barriers to entry that these poor people, whether it's in Pakistan or Scotland or wherever, who are shut out of legacy systems, they become in a perverse way and just for now I'll say it's an unintended consequence, they've become sort of victims twice over. Because these predators can go in almost like, and this is really a bad analogy, but almost like say the gangs in the United States in the 1920s who were shooting up speakeasies over booze. Whereas now you can kind of walk in and get a Guinness or a Budweiser anywhere and not feel a tinge.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, have you thought about that at all, or is that just me being too abstract?
No, 100%, absolutely right. And we went to Uganda and we spent a lot of time in Uganda where OneCoin is far bigger than Bitcoin. Far more popular. I went to villages in Uganda where everyone has heard of OneCoin and hardly anyone had ever heard of Bitcoin.
Wow.
And one of the reasons, I think there are two ways they're shut out, because a lot of ordinary people, they don't really trust their banks at all, and they don't have access to banks. And Dr. Ruja would often talk about banking the unbanked, 2 billion people without bank accounts, cryptocurrencies can help, stuff that you'd say. That is an amazing message for Uganda.
Right.
And Ugandans, are very, very big with mobile money, M-Pesa and stuff. So the whole idea of digital money and banks on your phones makes sense to them. So they're kind of open to the message, but then at the same time, they're kind of shut out from Bitcoin because Bitcoin feels a bit too technical, a bit too complicated. I'm an ordinary person. I don't really get all this mining stuff. I can't figure out these wallets. They're all a bit complicated. I can't do all these clever trading systems. Mm-hmm. you know, all this trading that people are doing as well, and automated trading systems. And I don't want to have a different wallet. Like all these wallets, there's loads of different wallet. Blah, blah. So she turns up, Dr. Ruja, and says, we are going to make this so simple for you. You just open an account with us. You'll get your one coins. They'll be in your account and you can just send them to each other. Simple. Don't worry about the rest. So they're kind of shut out twice. They're shut out of mainstream finance because of the legacy systems. And then they feel slightly shut out of other cryptocurrencies because it's too complicated and too technical. And they take OneCoin takes advantage of both of those shutouts.
Unreal. That is such a great point. And it's something that I know people who are listening right now from our audience are just nodding their heads incessantly, because it's something we have pointed out to developers of Bitcoin Core, is what we'd call it, who make it overly complicated with second layer solutions and Lightning and Liquid and all these things no one can get behind. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know what? And the thing is, I think it's just good for those people listening and for your listeners and others to realize that when you do that, you accidentally, inadvertently open an opportunity up for a scammer to take advantage of ordinary people. You don't mean to do it, but unfortunately that is what can happen.
Wow. I was wondering if we could tie that together, and you managed to do it just brilliantly. I have to confess to the audience here, I wrangled Jamie in on a Friday night. He's got someone very important to him waiting for dinner, and I have taken a lot of his time. So let's end here.
Oh no, man! You could. I've got a little bit more time.
Okay, all right. Well, good.
You know, one of the reasons I really wanted to do this is because for what you just said, I really want people in the crypto world to listen to this as well and think about it, because I don't do that so many interviews, but I'll always try to do it with the crypto people because I believe in. I suppose if I was honest, I'm more of an optimist than a skeptic about cryptocurrencies. I think they're really interesting, and I don't want them to be undermined by this kind of thing. So I want to get the word out there about this, because I think in the long run, that really is what will help.
And I'm so glad that as I know, Temptation gets in there as a heroic figure. We had a chance.
Oh, yeah, he is. He is, you know. Like, this is the thing. Me and the BBC, we're here now in 2019. Temptation, Timothy Curry, and a few others have been saying this publicly for 4 years, when no one was listening to them, and it was a lot scarier because they were getting a lot more abuse. So it's a lot easier for people at the BBC to turn up now, but the credit goes to a lot of people who were criticizing this, who really believe in cryptocurrencies, who did not like what OneCoin was doing. And so it's people like him that should be getting the credit.
And that's interesting, because one question that I didn't think I would get to, but I'm glad I have a chance now to ask you, is for many people in journalism, especially on the investigative side, they're very afraid of having themselves enter the story and maybe overtake and become too big a part of the story. And I wasn't, I guess, worried about that with you, as I'm familiar with your work, and I happen to prefer a narrative approach to things. But you have most definitely entered this story. by way of your travels and all the work you put into it, but the reaction that you and I'm sorry, I want to call her Georgina, but her name is Georgia, is that right?
That's right.
Your producer, for some reason Georgina's on the mind, but you and Georgia have gotten into quite a pickle with the OneCoin people, and even though I laughed a little bit about it, When you have, you know, $10 to $15 billion sloshing around, you better watch your back, right? I mean, there's
yes,
you've gotten some threats, yeah.
Yes, that's fair to say. That ranges from online threats, which you can deal with, to, I suppose, slightly scarier background noise of what, you know, who's possibly involved. There's a lot of mystery about who's behind this, really. Was Dr. Ruja just a front for much more shadowy groups who are really running the show? I can't say too much about that because it's all a bit legally contentious. But yeah, you're absolutely right. When you're talking about that amount of money, other groups tend to be involved as well. And that's where it does get a bit more scary. So any jeopardy that you hear in the program is not something that we've laid on thick for the audience. I mean, it really is. It's really what's happening and kind of what we're feeling. And, well, the story's not over yet because we're still investigating. So let's see. Let's see where we end up.
Unbelievable. And just before we came on, I was doing some background research on OneCoin, trying to catch up on where it might be. And the Bank of Ireland has decided to tap out and will no longer cooperate and provide witnesses. There have been entire governments from, you know, Thailand to India, and now seems Ireland are a little hesitant to deal with this and say anything more. So unbelievable.
It's one of those stories, you know. I've been amazed at, how can I put it? You know how sometimes you find people online on Twitter or on Facebook or wherever screaming in capital letters about the greatest injustice they've ever seen and the biggest fraud of all time? And what do you do with those people? You usually ignore them and think, yeah, okay, whatever. Every now and again, they are actually right. And I think everyone ignores them because they think, no, I mean, this can't be true. You know, you're obviously making some of this stuff up, but the story's true. And I cannot believe that it's taken so long for a big media outlet to actually get to grips with it. And I think one of the reasons a lot of journalists haven't really touched this story is because they see it as a cryptocurrency story and they think, oh God, it's too complicated. I don't, you know, I'm not a technical journalist. Mm-hmm. Leave that to you guys. Leave that to CoinSpice. Leave that to Coinbase. Leave that to Cointelegraph. It's a weird niche little story. But it's not, is it? You've heard up to episode 5. It's not. It's actually, cryptocurrency is a bit of a misnomer. Really, it is an old-fashioned pyramid scheme that used the hype of cryptocurrency to get bigger than maybe any other pyramid scheme ever. That's what it is. So the crypto bit is actually put a lot of journalists off the scent because they leave it to someone else. But it's an old-fashioned story of people getting ripped off because of hype. Old as the hills.
Yeah. And it's something that we grapple with as a nascent industry, and an even more young, media or journalistic enterprise. Crypto media is kind of its own world. We have to kind of learn these old lessons, whether it's the BitConnects, and just a short aside before I let you go, on another news desk, crypto related. I was one of the investigators for the BitConnect scheme. They went after me, my wife, online. It was nuts. And I haven't really fully recovered from the shock of, you know, people approaching. I mean, nothing happened. But from doing that much research to try to find me, in my unofficial capacities, it was unnerving. So good on you for doing this. And again, the story's not over. I'm catching Jamie like literally in the middle of it.
And, That's right. And I'll tell you what though, one thing I probably should say, I don't know how it works in the US, but I've got to mention that OneCoin is still operating as a company. It's still going. And we saw its head office as if nothing has happened. And so OneCoin rejects all the allegations that we're making. It says it, and I'm just going to quote this, verifiably fulfills all criteria of the definition of a cryptocurrency, wants OneCoin to be traded in the future, but that's being slowed down by the authorities, regulators, and haters, that's their word, haters, and that our podcast can't really be trusted because it's made with the testimony of haters and former employees that have been sanctioned or fired. So they are responding to us as we're making it. With those, you know, that response that we give them airtime, you know, in the podcast, we say, you know, this is their response. They deny this. They say that they're legitimate. And then as this podcast unfolds, we keep coming back to them and saying, prove it, you know, give us more evidence and we'll put it into the show. So there's this weird dialogue as well going on that as we're making it, they are denying it. And then we are trying to respond to what they say.
So juicy. And it really is, you know, independent of where you come down and whether you are more sympathetic with OneCoin or Jamie or his work, it beyond anything else, the biggest compliment I can give and why I'm so insanely jealous about what you've accomplished here is that it's fantastic listening. It is mandatory listening, especially when you're in crypto world. But just as a human being, just trying to, if you're interested in mystery and Jamie's got this incredible intellect, very plastic. He can go from one. He's also hilarious. And I caught the Titanic. You know, they managed to butcher the Titanic theme during
You've got to, some of it gets a bit weird, doesn't it? I mean, we end up in the strangest places. A beauty pageant.
How
we end up at a beauty pageant. It's insane. And like, you know what? That's what I've learned about in this experience is we're getting people engaging in the question of cryptocurrencies. I've had loads of people emailing me saying, I now understand blockchain and crypto because it's being told through the story of a missing person and a scam. You know, like sometimes you think I'm going to teach you about Bitcoin by showing you what it is. I think we're doing it to ordinary people by showing them what it's not.
Yep.
So they can see the difference between one coin and Bitcoin, and that way they'll learn about Bitcoin. And it's through a story about people and loss and hope and aspiration and lies that people are really engaging with the ideas of the technology, but not they don't even realize they are. That was our plan. We teach people about this stuff almost, you know, through the back door because they're focused on this exciting, strange, peculiar story. And can I just say this? We managed to get the Bulgarian, this is a secret for you, the London Bulgarian Choir, we commissioned them to do the soundtrack for us. And the main song that you can hear running throughout is actually about Dr. Ruja herself. You'd need to know Bulgarian to know that.
Wow. It is the lie that tells the greater truth. It is the missing crypto queen. Presented by Jamie Bartlett and his crew right now on BBC Sounds. We'll have links to it in the show notes along with his written work and his work for BBC Two. Amazing stuff.
I think probably on iTunes. I mean, you can get it on all the usual.
On all the catchers?
All the usual places.
Well, there it is. I appreciate all of your time. Thanks for being so generous and coming on. And
hey, how about this? At the end, we've got 3 weeks to go. The story's unfolding. If we make some enormous breakthrough, I'll be back on there if you want me for a few minutes to just tell you what's happened.
I'll demand it. And thanks to Victoria for hooking us up here. Thanks again, Jamie. Go on and enjoy your night. My best to your future initial human offering here, and I'm rooting for you.
Thanks, man. I will be keeping you guys all posted on this one.